Hang in there, it is.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Aloha, Smiley.
Aloha, Fred.
Aloha. It was an Aloha Friday. I guess it's an Aloha Sunday. If you're listening to this now, it's an Aloha Monday. Can it be an Aloha every day of the week in Hawaii, or is it only Friday that works?
No, Aloha every day. Definitely grooving with that for sure. I even put on like my Aloha shirt. I forgot all of my the Golf Channel shirts they give us, and normally they give us some here. And so I had my RLX one, so I feel like I had to bring the heat for this record.
I will say this is such a big miss, because what I'm doing now, if you're watching this on YouTube, is, you know, I'm just going to beat people over the head until they're so sick of me. I've got the Bill Belichick cut off North Carolina football hoodie.
I'm so over this.
Rocking.
I'm so over this.
I love it. This is so good. It's January 5th at the time of recording. We have months to go before the season starts, but like I'm going to make you so sick of this. But this is a big miss, because one of my favorite polos in my closet is an RLX Walker Cup polo from Seminole.
Sure.
That is like navy, sure, with the white floral print on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, so, so good. And we could have been matching RLX bros, RLX floral print Aloha bros.
Yeah,
and
definitely could
it.
Have.
Yeah. I'm sorry, buddy.
It's
That's
right.
on me. That's
it's all
on
good.
Me.
You're looking good.
You look good in the floral print.
Has the New Year treated you well? How was the drive home? Was it better on the way back than the way there? Because you were in Florida for at least 2 weeks at least.
Two and a half. Yeah, I think it's just about 2.5.
How good was that reset?
It was so nice. It was I won't go too deep into this dive, because we have, you know, real live PGA Tour golf to talk about. But the trip started as bad as it could have started, because my son contracted RSV, and that was a tough scene. Although I will say, if you're trying to recover from RSV, doing it in a tropical climate like, you know, South Florida is a lot
better. You can get outside. Like, you can go and do activities.
Be out in the air. So that was great. Could not have ended on a higher note, as I discovered. So I got one of those little right-handed irons for my son. I'm right-handed. And I've been trying to get him to play golf. He won't do it. He'll hit like one ball and he wants to go away. I noticed towards the end of this trip, going out, and my parents had these beautiful close crop Bermuda grass in their backyard. It's just like to die for. I wish so badly I could have this in my yard here in North Carolina. And so Walker is going up to the ball and he's flipping over the club. Like, if you hit a ball up next to the tree and you flip a right-handed club over and you hit that like little left-handed punch sort of toe shot, he's flipping it over and he's like making pretty good contact with it. And I was like, is there a chance he's left-handed? Order him a left-handed club. This kid was grinding. Like, day one, got the club in his hand, was not missing the golf ball, striping this thing across the yard. 3 days in a row, we put in probably 3 hours of practice each day. He wanted to go out in the morning and play. He wanted to go out for nap time. He wanted to go out before dinner. And the last day we're there, he points down to his right hand and says, "Boo boo, boo boo." I'm like, "What's time?" He has blisters on his right hand. This
guy,
guy's grinding.
I love to hear it. So you're telling me he's got a little Shohei Ohtani in him, a little left-handed bomber.
He throws right, kicks right, but he's a left-handed, he swings the club left-handed. So I'm thinking I got to show him.
The scouts love to hear that too.
Love it. Well, I'm going to try to keep him away from baseball. But on the golf front, I think we're going to watch a lot of Phil, Mike Weir, Akshay Bhatia in a contemporary sense. But here's the one I'm putting an eye on here, is I'm going to show him a bunch of Will McGee, who's Annika Sorenstam's son. I think that's the guy he needs to be watching. Model a youth swing after a sweet swing and lefty. So I'm just going to pump left-handed golf videos in his direction, and we're going to get him swinging it good.
Man,
so it was
speaking of Akshay Bhatia, man, did we suck with our one and done picks this week. We were so bad. Colin Morikawa was going to have a good week. And I'm so bad about feeling like I should save players instead of just picking the guy who I think is going to have a great week. It was an overthink job. I was kind of hoping that Akshay, being in the final group last year, that, hey, you know, a top 10 is great. Like, that's would be a great way to start the season for me. And if he, you know, even got closer to winning. It's like, man, you seem like the smart guy. When I think I'm already overthinking it week one.
Well, okay.
We sounded better than you, though.
You did a lot better than I did. And also I have like my men's league team. We have like this little kind of pool where we kind of put in money together, and I coming out of the gate strong. They always tail our picks, and I had to issue a lot of apologies this week after just really getting us off on a poor start. So my bad, guys. We'll do better. I think if I'm going to make a defense of us, it is that we're trying to save guys. So you can't just use big guns right out of the gate, even though a lot of them are available and playing well in a signature event. Like, neither of us were going to use Colin Morikawa this week. We have opportunities to use him in majors or other events as the season goes on. So that's item one. And item two is, I think, you know, we had to kind of get back into full season form. Like on my behalf, we had a nice break around the Christmas time. We were, you know, maybe enjoying some time with family, not so plugged in. I did not realize Sahith had switched to a broomstick putter. Maybe wouldn't have picked him. Had
another. Oh, no, I don't even know if he used the broomstick, by the way.
That was practicing, right? Yeah.
I've seen him use 3 or 4 different putters in a practice session, and he always ends up using his gamer. I don't know if it's just a mess around and sort of deal, but I don't really see that many players tinker to the extent that maybe Sahith will do. But Hideki Matsuyama had 4 putters here with him this week, and apparently he picked the right one, because this center shafted putter that he asked Scotty Cameron to build, because he was noticing on the greens this week, or at least in weeks past, that guys were using this type of putter, or center shafted putter, which I, for somebody who covers golf, haven't seen a whole lot of. So he must have seen like one guy and seen their putter and said, yeah, I need this putter, because it was so impressive. I don't know if you want to get there yet.
Yes.
Because one and done's is obviously near and dear to our heart. And a lot of the people came to the show from our hot streak. And we started out so hot with one and done's last year. I think you had Jake Knapp early. You know, we had so many winners right off the gate. So disappointing. I'm frustrated. Gonna have to get back in the lab for the one and done's, Charlie.
Well, I think that's the other thing that's the other excuse we can make, is that we didn't start till the Mexico Open last year. So check in with us at the Mexico Open. If we're not informed by then you can start sounding the alarm bells. But we need a little bit of time to kind of ease into the season. Yep. We'll get there eventually. Just stick with us.
Now that we have data, I think Charlie would not be able to go plug in, you know, just his data golf model. I think definitely hindered you this week, not having any type of data points that you could look at in 2025. So now you have the shootout, the century shootout that you can look at.
Well, and I think that's the other thing too, and this is another thing we're going to get into, because there's two things you mentioned. There's Hideki's putting, and also just what an aberration this week was. So let's kind of start there, because it's you know, on data golf, the one tool you can look at is, you know, predictive course fit, you know, like just looking at the modeling of how these guys play on certain types of courses, and traditionally how Kapalua profiles in terms of, you know, what, you know, is it guys who hit it good off the tee, or guys who have a good approach play, or whatever. This course played so different this week than it normally does, because there was no wind, and because, as you mentioned,
well, no wind on Thursday was humming. Friday, yes. Saturday, no wind. Today, there was enough wind to cause some, you know, just some issues on some shots.
Well, I think, and maybe that was just a select few anecdotal, you know, things I heard on Golf Channel, a number of people, you know, that were just kind of saying from their perspective, there wasn't a ton of wind. And also leading into the week as well, the other factor was that the course is very soft. And so right. let's get right to it. So Hideki Matsuyama, of course, sets the 72-hole scoring record on the PGA Tour, 35 under. And this for me was like shades of, obviously, Cam Smith's record-setting effort here in 2022, because Cam wins at 34 under, but John Rahm at the time had the second lowest 72-hole score in PGA Tour history at 33 under, but was a runner-up in that tournament. Matt Jones finished at 32 under. So you know, finishing up this tournament, Colin Morikawa is a runner-up at 32 under, but that's tied for the fourth lowest 72-hole score in PGA Tour history. And so, Smiley, this is something you've said a lot on the show, is if it's soft, if course is soft and the wind is down, these guys are going to shoot nothing because they're the best players in the world. And so obviously, you know, to your point, there was some wind here and there, but largely it was soft to enter the week. The wind was down. And I think I'm remembering this correctly in 2022 was there was not a ton of wind that week either, but maybe the course was a little bit firmer. So just, you know, before we dig into Hideki's performance, just course conditions and how they played into it. Is this something I've heard that they're already talking about changing the par five fifth, I believe it is, to a par four, you know, trying to move from a par 73 to a par 72. What were your kind of reflections on how the course played this week? And, you know, do you like seeing a score this low?
Yeah, the PGA Tour rules officials were meeting about that this morning so they could put that in the summary before next year to try to change that fifth hole to a par four, which needs to happen. I mean, guys are hitting 8, 7, 6 irons into this hole for a par five. It played actually below four today, which is insane. So, like, we're talking about a par five that played below 4.0. There was an albatross from Taylor Pendrith on that hole today. It's the widest fairway ever.
Did you see Brently Romine's tweet on that where they asked Taylor Pendrith? So they asked Taylor Pendrith after, you know, how many albatrosses have you made? He said, I've only made 3 hole in ones, but I've made 8 albatrosses.
That's absurd.
Have you ever made one? I assume you have.
Yes, I have.
But not more than one, right? Or maybe more than one.
Nope, I've just made one. Just made one.
Can you imagine making 8 albatrosses?
It helps your score. 2s on 5s definitely help.
Anyway, but sorry to derail you. I had to get that in the notes there.
I texted my dad after, I believe, the Friday or Saturday round. So my dad's nickname is Squirrel Man, as you know. He gets up and down like a squirrel would from anywhere. And I said to him, I was like, you know what? I really do think that you could have shot under par today. And that is... I'm serious. I'm telling you, that was the easiest a golf course will ever play. I believe it was Friday. I think there were 19 players that shot 7 under or better. And then there were 8 players that shot 9 under. There were 4 players that improved their score by 10 shots. And one player, Davis Thompson, improved his score by 14 shots. So we're talking what a difference this golf course, how it can play in wind like it did Thursday with the hardest day it played all week, really, because the scoring average was closer to actually 2 under par, and where Friday the scoring average was closer to 5 under par, so a 3-shot difference. It's the only way you can protect this golf course is wind. Yes, you can make the par 5 fifth hole a par 4, so there's 4 strokes that you take away at the end of the week. But when you look at it, I mean, Hideki Matsuyama going from 35 to 31, are we still going to say, oh yeah, that's much better? Now, it's just one of those golf courses, right? Like, there's just...
Yeah,
there's just no defense to it. The greens are just not firm. The fairways are so wide. Statistically speaking, the easiest greens to hit on the PGA Tour year in and year out, I think over like 20 years, like 1 or 2 years, it wasn't the leader. So you hit tons of greens. You have 4 par fives and 3 par threes and a drivable par four. So all that being said, I think that argument that everybody has in the office where you're just shooting, you know, the bull with the other golf guys in the office about, hey, what do you think you would shoot on the PGA Tour? And that one guy's like, yeah, what's your handicap? Well, I'm a 2. Well, you probably shoot, you know, an 85 to 90, something like that. I really do think if you were a scratch who was 0 and you played golf on Friday and Saturday and no wind, I think it plays true. Like, I know they tuck the pins. But it's just not hard. Like, I'm telling you, it's just not difficult. The challenge, and maybe this is something that I'm overlooking a little bit, is that there's so much slope that you're playing off of, and that the pros make playing off of huge slopes make it look really easy. So maybe I'm undervaluing that just a little bit. And also, I guess this argument kind of goes with when there's no wind, because if you have, you know, a 10-mile-an-hour breeze out there, it's enough to really move some golf balls into some bad places. So I'm just using the example of a Charlie Hume out there, and he tees it up in the PGA Tour on Friday, Saturday, and you're close to a 0. I mean, I really do think you'd shoot in the 70s. I really do feel that way. But with the pressure and you're chipping at times, yeah, whether you're feeling it, I don't know, but I think you can go shoot under par if you're a scratch player easily.
I tell you what shot I wouldn't want is the second at the sixth hole when it catches that slope and rolls in the rough and you're looking at that thing. I just watching Dietrich, Matsuyama and Morikawa all there today.
Yeah.
Where they cause it's tricky. Right. And we've all played golf where you're at a course where there's like it looks like a trick putt. You can start it so high, it's going to funnel in, but it feels like the higher, if you try to hit it high up that hill, it's only going to gain more speed and roll off the green on the other side. And so you had Dietrich try to take it left.
There weren't many birdies. And it was all from the top.
Colin
tried to lay it up top. He just hammered one.
Well, but you know, you're also scrubbing spin off of it coming out of the rough. Like it's that, I think that there are tricky shots out there. I hear what you're saying. I think it's a fair point, but I also think that, you know, dome golf. Yep. Absolutely. If it starts blowing a little bit and some of the slopes put you in bad spots, I get a little nervy out there.
So the one thing I'll add, and I think I said this, during our one and done picks, if you tuned in to our live deal, which you definitely need to get in on the comments on that. If you're a listener here, so definitely every week, be looking out
on our Instagram.
Yeah, yeah, our Instagram.
Although we might go to some different social platforms. Just we'll stay
see.
Tuned.
We'll see. But if you were listening, I had just spoken with Xander Schauffele on that tee, which we definitely need to talk about Xander's performance this week on him getting off to a slow start. But he had mentioned that, yes, Troon, I guess I'm not sure how long they've been involved with Kapalua, but they apparently like it more green. And I know it looks better on TV, but it also makes the golf course play much softer. So maybe if they're able to just firm it up a little bit, it was in unbelievable condition. So I'm fine with shootouts at the beginning of the year. They typically give more wind. I think the magic number, if we can get there, is something in the mid-20s. 35, obviously, with no wind, which never happens here when you've watched this tournament over the years. They've had to, you know, delay play for wind. That's how hard it's blown at times. So, I know we definitely need to get into Hideki Matsuyama and his record-breaking performance this week.
Well, let's start with something you mentioned earlier about the putter, because he has that center shafted Scotty 009 Proto. And it's so interesting because I'm of the same mind as you. Is like none of us miss the jailbird craze. None of us miss the broomstick phase. I guess I've seen like Callaway advertising like the square to square center shafted versions of some of their putters, but it kind of came out of nowhere. It wasn't like I saw a guy on tour using that, even though guys are trying them now. So when I saw this report on Hideki, I was like, that's just sort of interesting. It's not like I saw a guy win with the center shafted putter, and it's curious he decided to make that change. But in the past, you know, Hideki, really early stages of his career, struggled with various parts of his short game. He's amazing around the green now, but putting has been a weakness of his at times. This week, third in the field strokes gained putting, gained 1.35 strokes. So just, you know, and I know there were some nervy moments there at the end, but what did you see? Do you think that was a true representation of, you know, a progress he can make putting? Or is this a week where the greens were in perfect shape, there wasn't a ton of wind messing with the putts, and this might be a little bit of an aberration?
Well, I would say that Hideki is just the classic streaky putter. I think when Hideki's on with the putter, he's unbelievable. It's a reason why he's won so many times, 11 times on the PGA Tour, is because he is capable of making important putts. You know, I look at his stats from last year, and he was right around 123rd in the putting statistics. And then this week, like you say, third. But like even Friday, he was missing. He had like 3 or 4 putts inside of 6 feet that he had missed. So I wouldn't call it an aberration. I would say that it was definitely for him just – everything was going right as far as just being able to make putts outside of 10 to 15 feet. So when you get to 35 under, yes, you're going to have some 20, 30 footers in a round. And he was able to make, you know, 3 or 4 putts outside of 30 feet. He made 3 putts from 30 feet and beyond on just the 11th hole. So I think when we talk about his game and just overall, you know, what kind of profile does he fit into as a player? And I'm surprised, and I was a little upset too after I looked at all of the things that make up his game. His wedge game is so freaking good. And there's a stat, actually, it's 50 to 125. And he was second in that category. And then, so when we think about this golf course, when we think about that stat, you're like, okay, mm-hmm. good wedge player. That's a great fit. And don't forget too, this guy has been in contention in this course. He's finished top three twice. The other one that was interesting too was 175 to 200. And Hideki's always been a good middle mm-hmm. long iron player, but just last year, and I'm sure you can go many years back as well, he was third in that statistic last year. So when you take how this golf course makes you hit middle to long irons onto the par threes, and you have a ton of wedges, and then you have perfect greens with no wind and a bigger driving, you know, fairway room than you have anywhere else on the PGA Tour. And he's a straight hitter of the driver. But mm-hmm. when you watch him hit drivers this week, you wonder how many of those one-handed finishes would have ended up in the rough at other courses. But this week, they were ended up right in the middle of the fairway. So with that being said, I would say that his putting, definitely the weakest part of his mm-hmm. game. I think we could both agree on that, because his short game, if you watch his chipping around the green, is phenomenal. Silly. So when yes. he has wedges in his hand, I'm surprised that you and I both didn't have him on our radar heading into the week. But we definitely won't moving forward, because it seems like it's a perfect fit for him.
Well, it just going back to August of last year, just looking at Hideki's form, so to speak, even though there's a long layoff of sorts other than playing the Zozo in the offseason, is wins bronze at the Olympics, of course, shows up at the FedEx Cup playoffs, wins the first event at the St. Jude, withdraws from the BMW Championship after the first round, still finishes tied for ninth at the Tour Championship. This statement, this is going to sound so dumb coming out of my mouth. All right, I'm going to preface it with this, but when I was doing some research for the show and set up the rundown, I looked this up, and it kind of surprised me for some reason. Like, do people kind of forget that Hideki's the sixth ranked player in the world? Like, I guess maybe to pose as a question to you, like, do we consistently underrate how good Hideki Matsuyama is?
I think so, because let's just look at last year, and Scotty Scheffler obviously won half of the signature events and also won, I guess technically a playoff event being the Tour Championship, although with a staggered leaderboard. But Hideki was the only other player to win a signature event and a playoff event. So we're already talking about, you look at Xander Schauffele's year, and we talk about the majors, because guess what? The majors is what we talk about a majority of the time when we look at how good a season somebody had all outside of a certain amount of guys. And I think we got a little caught up in like, hey, Hideki did win at Riviera. He did win mm-hmm. in Memphis. You know, going he did away, win a Riviera. Bronze medal. So
yeah,
it was an underrated year that he had. And I just have a feeling that, he's not done winning. I think a lot of people feel the same way. I think major championships, whether it's Augusta, it's always easier to go back when you've won the Masters, not as much pressure to win there for a second time as it is your first. So definitely not overlooking Hideki before Augusta National, right?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, especially the guy who has a green jacket. And I thought it was a cool tidbit from the broadcast today. I think it was he got bib number 78. Yeah, at Augusta, it's either that or 87, and he now
78 because I wanted to drop.
Puts that on his ball.
I was thinking about the joke of that, and never had a time to say it because 78. That's such a frustrating number in the game of golf. When you shoot 78, you're like,
oh yeah.
Why not 79 or 77? 78 just is. There's some that's numbers that sound point. Better than others. Yeah. You know what I mean?
79, you just didn't have it. It was one of those days. 77. And I say this for me, obviously you're not thrilled with any of those numbers, but 77, it's like, okay, we weren't that far off. 78, it's like you're just in zone.
No, you gave up and you quit on not only on yourself, but on your family. Like,
And you should probably hang up the clubs.
You should look at yourself in the mirror when you go out and you settle for a 78.
Yeah, it's not a score you want to shoot.
It's not fighting.
But apparently it is a Masters bib number that you want to have. So, I love it.
Are you superstitious and all? with golf? Like, is there anything that you have to do? There's one thing for me.
To borrow from Michael Scott, I am a little stitious.
Well, I'll give you mine while you think on yours.
Please. Yeah, yeah.
My one.
You're talking about golf, right?
Or life. Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I guess it could cater into a good and a bad day, whether you're playing golf or not. But I am a stickler in the car with the air conditioner. I have to make sure that it's always on an even number and not on an odd number.
Okay, that's an interesting one. Like, you're talking about on the way to the course.
If you have 71 degrees on the AC heading to the golf course, for sure having a bad warm up and I'm three over through two holes.
I think this is a really good question, because I feel like I'm a creature of habit to a certain extent. There's a certain process, like an order that I do things. And if I don't do them in that order, it puts me in a bad headspace.
Where's beer in that order? where's hydrate in that order?
If it's not in the cooler, then it's going to be a bad day. That's as simple, as that one. But you know, what's funny is, like, since becoming a dad and having like two kids, like, and you just never, like, all your routines, forget about all of them. Like, any structure you had in your life, it's all gone. So I think that actually in some ways has made it easier to not get hung up on little things. Cause I'm like, I'm lucky if I'm making it to the first tee on time, let alone warming up, putting on sunscreen, all this stuff. It's like, we'll just get there and we'll just start swinging golf clubs. We'll figure it out from there.
I was talking to Ludwig Oberg and Joe Skavron, former caddy for Ricky Fowler and Tom Kim. We were talking on the range and I was asking Joe, we were talking just about golf and how much he plays, and he said, or I asked him, I said, hey Joe, what's a normal amount for you to warm up before the round? And he's like, it's a good question, you know, it just depends if I start getting chatty with everybody on the range. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, well, that sounds like Charlie, because I'm sure Charlie hits a shot, talks to somebody, hits a shot, makes a bet, hits a shot, goes, grabs a drink. He's Chatty Cathy. I've seen this guy work his way around at Hope Valley.
I'm glad that you teed it up in that fashion, because that's part of the whole experience. You know, you're at a place that you love with people that you love. And do I want to, you know, see how I'm hitting it that day? Definitely. But do I want to kind of do the thing where, you know, I hit a shot and then I'm kind of set up for a next shot, and then something comes to my mind? Oh, hey, Rob, by the way, you know, and striking up a little conversation. That's how you get, you know, sort of junior mayor status. Maybe someday you become the full-on mayor. It's a very important process of the country club.
It's a fine line now for me, figuring out if I should care about my warm-up. Do I want to turn my brain on, or should we wait until we see what we got on the course to decide whether we're going to go into full panic, turn the brain on out on the golf course? So it's always a balancing act. I know this is getting off the superstitious thing, but that also kind of plays into the argument of how do you handle your warm-up. So, and I watch Patrick Cantlay before his Friday round, hit balls for like 45 minutes to an hour before his round. And so like, he's full grind mode. Wyndham Clark, same thing, almost like an hour of hitting golf balls, where I would say that a lot of these guys this week seem like, after their first day, they're like out there kind of trying to find a little something to take with them the rest of the way.
Well, and that was the thing I was going to say, is that it is funny how that doesn't change, like, to the point of, like, even the Friday afternoon round at the country club. If I'm grinding and trying to find something, mirror mode is off. I am out there trying to find the center of the club face. If I'm in a good spot, you know, I'm relaxed. I'm kind of bopping around. It's funny, like, that holds true for all levels of golf, and I kind of love that. So to get to one of the guys who was apparently practicing a little bit after the conclusion of today's round, and who was the runner up in this tournament, Colin Morikawa. This effort was completely different from the collapse we saw 2 years ago, where Rahm, you know, comes back from a seemingly insurmountable deficit and wins a tournament after Colin mainly had some serious short game issues, which you all discussed on the broadcast today. And Colin, without a doubt, will tell you he left a few on the table today, some untimely three putts, but largely just got beat by a guy who played incredible golf, right? So they had the three putts on 5 and 6. You know, maybe you tell me here, like, it felt like his approach game relative to some of the other days was like ever so slightly off compared to his usual standard. Yep. And you got the big greens. If you're not hitting it close to the pin, you leave yourself open to those sorts of three putts. So just, I guess, starting there, just like evaluating Collins' whole performance. It's a guy that, you know, we think is very, very close, but admittedly, just, you know, it was a little bit of strokes left out there today, but just watching Hideki go 35 deep, there's not much you can do about that.
Well, let's just kind of start at the beginning of the day, you know, being one shot back, and I was interested to see who was going to put their foot on the pedal first. And so Hideki holes out at the third hole for an eagle. So you're like, okay, I guess Hideki's going. And then Colin, you know, backs up that hole out and makes birdie himself at three. So you're like, all right, Colin's not going away. But you're exactly right. I think the big difference today for Colin, which, you know, for the most part, when we look at his game, we look at his precision iron play. Mm-hmm. And today he was not on whatsoever with his iron game. So when you take away what he does really well, which is that his proximity, and then you throw in three huge mistakes, which were the three putts at the fifth, three putts at the sixth. So that three putt at five was for par, bogey at six, and then nine was an inexcusable up and down to not make birdie. So then you're four shots back going in the backside, and you just needed more mistakes from Hideki, because he wasn't making any bogeys. Mm-hmm. He really had, you know, Colin really needed to go out and fire a 30, which is 7 under on the back. And that's asking for a lot.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, and I kind of, this is going to be a little unfair to Colin here, but I just want to hear your thoughts on it, which is, you know, we like to very tongue in cheek discuss the clutch gene from time to time on the show, whether players have it, whether others don't. You know, it's a sports talk, sports debate trope, right? Colin has it, right? It's won two majors. I don't think anyone's questioning that. But I'm just curious that maybe in somewhat similar fashion to Rory and the major drought he's going through, do you feel like there is a pressure at all for Colin, you know, when he's playing as well as he has this past year? The last time he won was in fall 2023 at the Zozo. He plays incredible this whole last year, but doesn't notch a win, even though he would have won at the Tour Championship without starting strokes. You know, he comes into a Sunday here, shot off the lead. Do you feel like there's a little bit of pressure there for him, more so than the average player, of like, how long is it going to take me to win if I'm playing as good as I can, you know?
Well, I think this week when you look at the end for Colin and you look back at those three strokes, it was simple. You know, it was simple mistakes on a Sunday. And I'm a big component of not overthinking things when it comes to looking at, okay, what could I have done different? Do I need to go change anything with my golf swing or this or that? Well, I mean, the bottom line was he shot 32 freaking under par, and he three putted twice, and he had an easy up and down. Like, you just got to do that if you're going to win on a Sunday, especially when you're playing Hideki, who's not making any mistakes. But I wouldn't, as far as the clutch gene and all that stuff goes, I would say that first off, winning is very difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to do. He's putting himself in contention, which is a start. Like, you can't win unless you have an opportunity. And I think I look at, let's just Scotty's year in 2022 and 23. And he's even said this, Scotty has, if you haven't watched that hour long documentary the PGA Tour did, it was really interesting to hear some of what Scotty talked about, in that he really, you know, just was not able to win more, and the expectations for him definitely were higher. And in 24, even when he started winning, and we're talking about the putting all the way through this, he found a way to eventually get over the hump at Bay Hill. And then it's like the floodgates open. And I think for a guy like Morikawa, I think for him, it's realizing the moment, understanding what you got to do that day, and that you don't have to overcomplicate it. I think at times today, although it's a different and tricky win, that these guys typically don't play, so normally the wind is one direction, it was completely opposite today, which I think garnered a lot of conversation between him and his caddy. But I thought maybe we can be a little quicker and just playing with a little bit more feel with his irons. He's so good at feeling out numbers. I thought at times maybe he overthought some shots on the front nine with his iron play, but I think it's just knowing, Charlie, right? Like, hey, this is a big moment. This requires a big shot and being able to go out and do it. And I think Colin knows he can do it. And I think we all know he can. And I think that's what you need to look out for this year on that back nine, is is instead of hitting shots to 40 feet like we were saw mm-hmm. today and missing his numbers as often that he was, like, we need to see that precision iron play and then also just, you know, cleaning up a little bit of the BS that he had in his round today.
On the topic of precision iron play, and this is something that we're going to take Smiley into the swing breakdown lab here, right? We're going to give us a little bit of education for the layman golfer, the amateur golfer. His new pre-shot routine that he uses a lot of those iron shots, where it's that sort of like that lean and hip turn forward of like where he kind of, I guess,
Sam
wants
Sneed
to be impact.
Is what I read. Sneed, like that's kind of what he was trying to do. But
can you just explain what he's trying to do there for people who are trying to understand that better?
So like he's a flexion guy. So if you're watching on YouTube, he flexes this lead wrist. So you can see the back of the glove hand. You see it on the downswing too. Mm-hmm. So when this face is this strong, you have to rotate. And for him, when he doesn't rotate or if he leans back at all, he's going to have to play a lot with his hands. So he's just trying to create space around the hitting zone to where he can just hold the face off through the shot and hit cuts. When he gets off, he gets a little under, he doesn't rotate out of the top. And so that feel that he has with his lower body is to just open up, you got to rotate and just try to create as much space as you can.
I thought it was interesting hearing him talk about it as well, of just because he's gone through some of the back stuff of just getting to that position and feeling like, hey, I can trust this. Like nothing bad is going to happen. I can get there. And then when he's actually swinging, he's less tentative, kind of turning and getting through it a little
bit. Yeah, he's a magician, man. Like when we talk about guys, I think often, anytime Jordan's chipping, we're always like, this guy's a magician with his wedge. Well, Colin really is one of the best middle iron players I've ever seen to have as much ability to just hit fades and hit it, 10 to 15 yards further or shorter based off of, what he wants to do. Like his ability to take off, a 10 to 15 yards off of a 6 or 5 iron, it is so hard to do. And like most people would just hit spinny stuff out to the right or over, hit it too hard, miss their number, but he's so good at hitting his numbers. He's really unbelievable with those middle long irons hitting his numbers. But today, like you said, just a little off.
Well, I heard you say that on the broadcast today, and I thought that was so interesting. It just that as a guy who wants to see basically one shot shape all the time, his ability to kind of, adjust the number within a range with only one shot. So to just take that a little bit further, would it be more common for a guy that wants to take off, take a little bit of yardage off a certain shot to hit a straight ball, try to draw it? What is the most impressive thing about that if he's only hitting one shot shape?
I just think he knows what type of shot he wants to play. It's not going to overcomplicate it. A couple years ago when he was really struggling with his golf swing, he was hitting it left. And I think for him, he was just trying to get back to hitting fades. And I think when you go to a different teacher and they're like, hey, this is what you need to do to hit a fade. And he's like, well, I'm hitting it too far now with the proper mechanics. So I really think he's found out through all the trials and tribulations of going through different coaches that he's like, okay, this is how I need to do it. This is how I play golf. I'm the best in the world at hitting numbers with middle to long irons. So let me just keep at it.
And then on the topic of new routines, really, this is an old routine that is now new again. Victor Hovland, do you see that double pump driver move?
It's sick.
It's so sick. The ability to kind of stop it and reload it and hit it. So what I read, and maybe again, this is another thing you can expound on a little bit for people who want a deeper level of understanding, was just that for a guy who's a natural cutter of the golf ball, he said he likes to use it when he wants to work the ball right to left. Can you explain that in a little more detail?
Well, just thinking about his wrist mechanics, he's also a huge flexion guy. Mm-hmm. Like he gets that left hand here, right? Like he gets it actually, the club is very vertical. And then in transition, he just creates so much. That club head just goes straight inside, which is sick. I don't have the right.
Almost impossible to do.
I don't have the right wrist mechanics to do that because I'm more cuppy with my left wrist, which why I'm a good wedge player, but also struggle with driving the ball. But yeah, it's cool. I imagine that he probably has to feel that to just not rotate too soon out of the top. So it almost like makes you pause to stop. And then it's like, all right, there goes the club. And it kind of maybe just makes you slow down a little bit.
Also from the Victor Hovland files, big win for CSI TSS, as we were correct. We recreated the crime scene properly. Yep. It was
I think everybody knew.
It was pretty obvious, but just nice to be right on that one. We're pending confirmation from Scotty Scheffler on the recreation of that crime scene, but good to be right on at least one of those.
Yeah. I would say too, like with Victor Hovland, and I know you're probably about to get into this with Joe Mayo exactly. and the split with him and his coach. That's something that took us all a little bit by surprise, because we kind of felt like the second half of the year was like, okay, Victor understands what he's doing again with his golf swing. He's back with his coach. His chipping wasn't great during that time. So we expected just a bounce back year. And I think we talked about it before the week. And I think that pump drill that we're talking about just a moment ago, I really feel like he hasn't done that in quite some time. So there must be something from an ownership standpoint that he's like, you know what? I know what I did when I was playing well. I know he probably goes back to even his US amateur days when he was playing at Pebble Beach and he won out there, and what his golf swing looked like then and what his feels were. Players don't forget what their feels are when they're playing really well. And so most likely, and similar to a guy like Justin Thomas, who's, you know, not really hardly using any coaches now, he's just trying to take ownership of what he does. Yes, he can bounce ideas off of people. And I honestly think that's best for Victor. Like he's seen enough coaches to this point. Go play the golf that you know how to play and just remember those feels, and then just try to simplify the game.
Well, and that's exactly where I was hoping to head next. And I want to kind of further that question a little bit from a bigger picture perspective, because he said in an interview that the desire to split from Joe Mayo was mainly to own his own swing, right? And so just a question from a fan perspective who doesn't understand the ins and outs of, you know, playing at a tour level and what it's like to have a coach at that level. Can you explain a little bit of just the spectrum that tour pros live on, from, you know, the difference between a guy who needs a coach to be there with him all the time, you know, deep in the weeds and the minutia, and a guy that wants to be more like, let's say, Victor Hovland or Justin Thomas and kind of own it on his own. Like,
well, yeah.
Explain the psyche of those two different types of players.
You've heard, I thought Will Zalatoris was a good example of this week. Is he got off to a really good start, shot 8 under his first round, however many under that is, 73 throws me off, 65.
65, 70, 65, 73.
So he got off to a good start. And in the interview with Todd Lewis, I thought it was interesting, is that he was basically saying that last year, you know, he was working too much on his golf swing, trying to find and perfect something that is normally a strength of his. And he was hitting too many balls, wearing himself out. And I think his goal heading into the year was just to be ready when he got here, to be able to just go play golf. That's when he plays his best. So I think it's an understanding for most players of, what do I need from myself, my coaches, to play the best that I can? Do I need more information? Do I need less? And I think Willie Z is a great example. I was that way too. And when I really got off is when I started over practicing, trying to perfect something or find something. And sometimes you got to do it. Sometimes, hey, listen, the prescription from your doctor or coach is, hey, you got to go find it in the dirt. And sometimes you can get worse doing it. But a lot of times good players can go back and find one or two feels that they can really just groove in and put the reps in and the amount of time and effort they need to over it.
Okay, Smiley, I'm surprising you to a certain degree here. I don't think this should be too difficult to figure out, but I'm springing a few new segments on you this week. All right. I'm hoping these segments stick for the duration of the PGA Tour season and beyond. Okay. This first one, I want to do something that's kind of based on the four main strokes gain categories. And this doesn't have to align exactly with stats. This is like, I want the Smiley eyeball test here, right?
Ooh, okay. And
so here's what I want to try to do every week is who you are most impressed with in each of the four main strokes gain categories. So off the tee, approach, around the green, and putting. Okay. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the guy that was first in the stats there. It, mainly just like, what did you see? A guy showed you something, you were impressed. Yeah, so let's start off the tee. Who are you most impressed with?
Thomas Dietrich.
Oh, interesting. And why?
Yeah. I was looking at his distance and I was a little surprised at how far he was hitting it. He's a modern looking athlete. it kind of reminds you of Thomas Peters. You know, they both went to Illinois, Belgium guys. But he surprised me of how well he drives the golf ball. He was driving it straight. I think he was up there in that off the tee category. Thomas Dietry would be the driver of the ball that comes to mind.
Love that. Okay. Now let's go to approach.
It's easy for me to – I would say this. Hideki Matsuyama would be the answer as far as the approach goes because he was incredible. But as far as just par three shots that I saw, just maybe one guy that comes to mind who had a really good iron year last year, Maverick McNealy.
Yeah. It's great to see him finding some form. And he had a great week all around. So coming off that win, the RSM could be a big year for him. Next to around the green.
Around the green, Cameron Young.
Interesting.
And this
knocking on the door, right?
This was surprising because he was a player that has been held back by his short game. So I was really encouraged by Cameron Young around the greens this week. And you could probably throw him in the putting category as well. Actually, that will probably be my answer with the putting. Actually, Hideki again will be the answer for the chipping as well. But I think Cameron Young would just because, you know, we talk about when is this guy going to win on the PGA Tour? And it's every time he comes up on the screen, he's going to have to deal with that question of if he turns it on, he sees himself. He'll hear announcers talking about, you know, what is it going to take for this guy to get over the hump? And he's going to have to deal with that. But outside of him working on himself and just not being too hard on himself, I am in love with the way he looks over putts, and the chipping looks really good too. He was like really high up in both of those categories this week. So give me Cam Young there.
So Cam Young around the green and putting, any other putting honorable mentions, or is he taking both those categories for you?
I think Willie Z
would be after one full year, the broom.
Yeah. Willie Z really looked good with the putter this week. I think he's been working really hard on that like 15 to 30 foot range for a guy that's going to hit a ton of greens. So I was encouraged by what I saw with his stuff. And a quote that I read too from him is that he's not scared anymore about the comeback putts. You know, so often we were hoping they wouldn't cut away when Willie Z had a tap in. We're like, no, stay here. We want to watch the pain. We want to be here with him during this. And the broomstick has fixed that inside
that flutter thing.
Inside of 3 feet. So with that, you know, he's able to be a little bit more aggressive. And for him, just like Scotty, who hits a lot of middle of the greens where he has 20 footers, you know, more often than other guys, if he's able to pick off like Hideki did this week, where you're able to make one of those a day, that's going to go a long way.
There you go. I think very solid, strong debut for the segment. Thomas Dietry, Hideki Matsuyama, Cam Young, and Will Zalatoris. I like it. Yeah. So that one's in the books. Okay, so here's the next segment I got for you. And this is, I mean, really, it's a happy hour recap, but I want to do this in the spirit of you know, you and I not far away from picking our kids up from school, hopping the backseat. What was your highlight of the day, right? So here's what I want. In that dad spirit of the podcast that we really embody around here, I want one highlight each from the hangs with Max Homa and Sahith Theegala.
Oh, man. Sahith was great. He was right before he's like, I really haven't done this before. What do I do? I'm like, just talk just ball, bro. Out, just talk ball. He's a lot of fun to talk to. And I think this kind of goes back to what we talked about a couple weeks ago with him. Whether he can take that next step is for him. He's so good. He's so talented. And you want him just to be able to kind of just get into that zone that you see him in from time to time and stay there and you know, just stay a little bit more even keeled and have that belief, because it just seems like at times he is a bit of a doubter, bit of a worrier, and I'm fine with that. Everybody's, you know, wired a certain way. I feel like, you know, I think we all have our idiosyncrasies when it comes to that, and he definitely has a little bit of that. So I hope that he realizes how good he is, because it's incredible how impressive some of the shots he's able to pull off.
Yeah. And anything from Max that really stood out to you?
Man, Max, he's hilarious, man. He's so quick-witted. I think my favorite thing he said on the broadcast was talking, well, two things actually, now I think about it, talking about how Ludwig was built in a lab.
Yes.
Like that was hysterical. And great then I think line. In one of our breaks, I was talking to him about, yeah, it's going to be fun when we get back. We're just going to go chase our kids up and down the slide for an hour and a half. He's like, yeah, that's why I'm going to go hit balls for an hour. I was like, I go hit balls with you, please? Not I to say it. That we don't love our kids. It's just they're at an age now, toddler mode, that they can't swim. So you have to do everything with them. So it's just, you know, you're getting your steps in at the Weston pool here.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's it is a time intensive period at the moment. And then also, I mean, out of respect for your current sponsor, I mean, big ups that you got Mick Ultra in on the happy hour. You have been endorsed by beer companies in the past. And so maybe just send over some images of the previous sponsors and say, we could do a Mick Ultra beer tower. Maybe get me in a Jupiter Lynx basketball jersey.
Yeah,
I think there's some branding to be done there. All right. Maybe just pass that on to them. A little inspiration we'll for you.
I gotcha.
Here is the other segment I've got. This is again, I don't want to put you in a bad spot given your loyalty to your clothing and club partners here, but this is the Sicko Gear Tinkerers segment, okay? It's the turn of the year, lots of new stuff out there. I'm a free agent on all fronts, right? So I'm going to go through just some big items for all of my fellow sickos out there. You're free to jump in with any comments as we go, all right? Biggest gear apparel news of the week. I'm sure everyone's seen this. Max Homa signs with Cobra, Puma, and Lululemon. His wife, Lacey, apparently thrilled about the Lululemon deal. And, you know, also shout out to our good friends at T-Mobile for the big magenta patch on the Lulu polo. Still rocking the magenta phone here. So big ups to them. Still playing the Titleist Pro V1X ball. Apparently big fan of the 3D printed Cobra irons and wedges. His Cobra driver apparently somehow playing at 9.4 degrees. I think I heard on the broadcast it has 60 different settings. I don't know if I heard that right.
33.
That is, as a tinkerer, entirely too many settings. But playing TaylorMade fairway woods and still using a Scotty 5.5 proto putter. So some staying the same and then obviously some different. So that's a big one on Max front. Xander Schauffele, along with a bunch of other Callaway staffers, using the new Callaway Elite triple diamond driver, which, look, I'm a loyal Callaway AI Smoke Max guy, and I just blows my mind they came up with something that's better than this, because that club should be entirely illegal. You can hit it anywhere on the face and it goes straight. So Xander and the new Elite driver. The Ping driver, fan favorite for many years for a lot of different people. Sahith, among a number of other Ping staffers, now is the new G440 driver in the bag. Enjoyed that part of the discussion where you're talking about the Ninewood and other tinkering he's been doing with the people at Ping. So that's a big update there. Two friends of the show, Colin Morikawa and Nick Dunlap, both in that new TaylorMade QI35 model. Obviously worked well for Colin this week, even though he comes up short. And then, of course, we mentioned the center shafted Scotty Cameron putter earlier for Hideki, but we have to close the big shout out to Hideki and Srixon for the big win. And this is actually just me making a personal appeal to my guy, Quinn at Srixon, because he's telling me that he's got me dialed in for the new Srixon driving iron with the Hideki creamsicle shaft.
God, you have no idea. That's the most common club I see in guys' bags on tour. Everybody's got it.
I don't have to tell you this thing's an absolute rocket. Apparently, this thing drops on January 8th. It looks sick. So congrats to Hideki and Quinn.
It drops what today? I mean, it's already in my bag right here.
It's Monday. Yeah, it's the 6th when people are listening to this. So, you know, just can't wait to get my hands on it. So that's the Sicko Gear Tinker report, Smiley.
I like that report. That
do you
was
like
fun
that?
To listen to.
I just want to just run through it for the people out there who, like me, just, you know, sicko equipment people.
Love it.
So there we go. All right. And then here we go. We're nearing the end of the show, our first recap of tour events for the year. So I have one last quick hitter from Kapalua before we get to two big pieces of tour news. Yay or nay on Keegan Bradley's stash. And have you ever tried to grow facial hair?
I did grow some facial hair actually this year. This was right around Halloween. Peter Pan.
Yes,
I think it was on my Instagram. You probably can't even tell I'm trying to do a beard, but I was just curious to see what it would look like. And I think it was okay. If I was ever going to go on a, you know, trip out to Colorado, just nice to know I'm capable of doing it, but It's just too itchy for me.
Yeah. And but like, what do you think about a nice little Keegan style stash?
My brother can. When you're on the,
yeah, I can see that. Lux looks
can pull it off. Not for me.
Not for you.
That doesn't get me going. I'm not a stash guy.
Love seeing that on Keegan. That's a wrap for this week. I know you have to get out the door soon, but I have two quick ones for you on the larger PGA Tour front. The first one is, and both these we've covered extensively on the show, some point adjustments to PGA Tour U accelerated. So I'm going to rip through this list real quick, and then I just want to hear your reflections on whether you think these are good changes or whether you go further. So lifetime 26 weeks as the number one in the Wagger, you get a point. Lifetime 52 weeks as number one in the Wagger, 1 point. Top five in official PGA Tour event or select DP World Tour events, which is the Luke Clanton rule, 1 point. Top 10 in ties at the D1 NCAA Individual National Championship, you get a point. Jones Cup, you get a point. Northeast Amateur, you get a point. Southern Amateur, you get a point. Now, there's a whole, this whole, next whole section is an adjustment down in points. African Amateur, previously 2 points, they've knocked that down to 1 point. Asia Pacific Amateur, previously 2 points, they've knocked that down to 1 point. D1 NCAA Individual Champion, that is 2 points, was previously 3 points. The European Amateur is 1 point, that was previously 2 points. The Latin America Amateur, 1 point, that was previously 2 points. British Amateur, 2 points, which was previously 3 points. U.S. Amateur, 2 points, which was previously 3 points, and the Western Am, 1 point, which was previously 2 points. Ton of info in there, but I mean, do you like just at face value?
I think U.S. Amateur should be 3. Yeah, I think if the awards are that you give at the end of the year, the Nicklaus, the Hogan, and the Fred Haskins, I believe is the other one. I'm not quite sure if that's the last one.
I think that's correct.
If those are getting 3, the U.S. Amateur should be getting 3. I don't understand why that. But listen, this, all I really care about is if you're an amateur and you come out and you play well on the PGA Tour, like Luke Clanton did, like you're going to be rewarded for it. All the other ones, it seems like, you know, the Northeast, the Southern, those are all really good amateur events that I played in that definitely deserve to be, Jones Cup, another one that I fully agree with those getting a point. But yeah, it's interesting to see if we continue on with players, you know, making it out of the accelerated program. I think it would garner more interest from people if we have multiple players over the next, you know, 4 or 5 years get out of this program. We've already had, you know, Gordon Sargent being a guy that, you know, it's kind of flown under the radar. He came on the scene so much a couple of years ago at the Masters. Now Luke Clanton, right? Like he's definitely on the scene. And I think we're ready to see him on the tour as fast as we can. We'll see him next week at the Sony.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, I guess my only, not even a gripe, but I feel like the takeaway from last year was we'd love to see more points awarded for performance on PGA Tour. Like, after all, that's the goal for these guys to get there.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad they're giving that extra point for a top five. I don't know.
Well, they had to do all this, right? Yeah. Like they had to refine this whole system to try to keep young talent on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And you need to have these kids feeling like there's a legitimate pathway as an underclassman to get there. For the really good kids, like the next guy in line that you think about, like, Blades Brown was going to be a guy, he turns pro, but the next one that we're going to be talking about heavily is Miles Russell. I think that's the next player who's, you know, still about to be a sophomore in high school. He's homeschooled. We'll see if he, you know, goes to college. If he doesn't, you know, he's going to be playing in all these amateur events and accumulating points probably this summer playing in those, or who knows if he'll go try to play more Korn Ferry PGA Tour events as a really young kid. He's kind of the next big thing coming up.
Huge miss by me earlier, because that's what I'm going to show Walker video of.
Miles Russell. Yeah,
that's easy.
Another good player, Tyler Watts. He's a good player out of Alabama. That
he's going to Tennessee. Is he committed to Tennessee?
I think so. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, so that's obviously a big one. The other one we've discussed at length on the show is just what's happening with the Tour Championship. And we heard Rory earlier say he might skip the Memphis event because it doesn't really matter. He's going to get to Atlanta anyway.
Sometime. by the way.
Something's happening. Yeah. So the headlines this week were that like the tour was reportedly in discussions to change that format. And the front runner idea is to take it to a match play sort of finish.
That's right.
And whether that's a staggered bracket style event, whether it starts with stroke play and ends up in match play, there's a seeded match play bracket, or one idea is just having match play for matches aside the top eight finishers in the tour championship. So you had mentioned before this was in the works. I don't know, which of these proposals do you like best? Maybe that's the best way to spin this forward.
Well, I think the biggest hurdle that they're going to have is that the PGA Tour all year is determined by stroke play. And I think you've seen Adam Scott say that in the headlines this week of why that might be an issue for a lot of PGA Tour players. I think to combat that argument is that the money needs to be much, much different for the playoffs versus the regular season. So they need the overhaul that needs to take place is how much money is going to be awarded at the end of the regular season. And then have a playoffs be for a very good chunk of change, but not the, I don't even know how much million they play for at the Tour Championship now. Is it 20 million? Is that what it is? I can't even remember.
Like 30. Yeah.
Is it 30, whatever it is. 30, it's a lot. Yeah. And I think that will get guys to, get up for playing for a lot of money. In match play, to not be burned by going out there in the quarterfinals where you go out, shoot 5 under, and you lose to another guy who shoots 7. And I also hear that match play would be stroke play potentially. So you would still – it would
– Oh, it'd be a gross head-to-head competition.
That's what I've heard a rumor about as well. So that's another thing to keep in mind. I don't know if I like that a ton, but also it's a way in which, match play can be a little interesting at times, that you could beat a guy on three, or on a hole, right? Like you could technically be 3 up on him after that hole.
Only
lose one. But it's match play versus stroke. I don't know. Just something to keep in mind.
I guess my rebuttal to the we play stroke play all year long is that we also don't do all year long is have starting strokes for a tournament. So I you know what I mean? Like I find it hard for people who are saying,
The whole thing's clunky. It's clunky.
But to your point, and I can't believe I'm sitting here advocating for Comcast, but like for the love of God, make Comcast Business Tour a real thing. Like make the money, and it is significant money, but like that, it should be, we talked about this on the show before, like it should be a Premier League, League Cup sort of setup where the season long means a lot financially. And then the playoff is also financially significant, but it's just a different sort of style. And it's more compelling television because it does end up in this cool match play scenario. So interesting to see that it's in works. It sounds like it's doubtful that's going to happen this year, but maybe this whole sort of confluence of Roy saying he's going to skip a bit.
I wouldn't say doubtful. I think we're going to know a lot in the next month.
Well, that's interesting. So there you have it, Smiley. I think that's what we got for today's episode. We're past the hour mark now, so plenty of content. I think the only other thing worth getting in the notes is it looks like, pending your flight status over to the Sony, I don't know that we're going to be able to do a live show, but the plan is to make Wednesday's episode a reaction to the first TGL match featuring my big golf club against Ricky Fowler's Pigeons.
I think it's the right thing to do. Because something that's this new that everybody's getting eyeballs on for the first time, we gotta give you our thoughts. So we're gonna do it.
Yeah, love that. Hoping my boys, we're rolling out Shane Lowry, Ludvig Åberg, and Wyndham Clark this week. So Minwoo, we'll work them in the lineup later, but it's a good Bay lineup. I love to see it. Love the Pigeons, but. Pigeons are going down this week. So
Anna Carter doesn't like pigeons. Turns out the pigeons by the parrots out here by the pool. She says no pigeons. So she is not a New York Golf Club fan. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Did you explain to her how smart they are? And
she does not
like
the pigeons.
Oh man. I'll have a talk with her. We'll work on that. Very good. Well, hey, enjoy the rest of your time there in Hawaii with the fam. Hope it's been good thus far. Aloha to you. You can use aloha as goodbye too, right? Or is that like mahalo or something?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. It all works. Well, aloha, mahalo. Thanks everyone for hanging out, watching, listening, and we'll talk to you in just a couple days, reacting to the very first TGL match. Talk to you then.
You know, I listen to this podcast, it's really cool, and
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too, so please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the